felt your breath get faster and you began to feel your heartbeat in your throat. You felt somehow that danger was close at hand. You went inside and up to your room and closed the door. You remember staring at the ceiling, confused. A second event that you remember about moving was going to the new school. You were the only white person there, and you heard other kids talking softly about you. They said that your lips were too little, that you must be a stingy kisser. And then they said that your nose probably was too small to smell anything. You remember recess and going over to a corner of the playground all by yourself. You cried, and you didn't know why you were crying. Today, as you look in the mirror and see your white face, you remember those two events. You wash, get dressed, and go downstairs to flip on the TV. There you see only black faces. Black newscasters, black actors and actresses acting out the dramas of black life. Black people selling hair products that wouldn't work on your hair. Selling an image of beauty that doesn't look at all like you. For a moment you wish you were different. You wish that instead of your blonde hair you had dark, dark chocolate color hair. That you were like them in some way so that you too could be beautiful. You think that if you were beautiful like that, people would like and accept you. You flip the channel and see a cartoon where the good guys, dressed in black, are chasing the bad guys, dressed in white. One white cartoon figure is acting really stupid. It's too painful on this particular morning to see the TV, so you switch it off and turn on the radio instead. You keep turning the dial to find a voice and a speech pattern that sounds like your own. It is hard to find. But finally, you hear what sounds like a white announcer and white music. This music speaks to you and to your spirit. Then you hear the news. News about other white persons and what they are doing. You hunger to hear because the TV carries only black news. Any news about white folks shows them doing violence to each other. Often a picture of white folks on the TV are of persons who are handcuffed or who look real mean. Your car is still in the shop, so you have to take the bus to church today. There are many white folk on the bus, and you feel pretty good about this. A couple of black people get on, but they act uncomfortable. They don't even look around. You get to the church and other members stare at you as you make your way to the pew. The bulletin cover has a picture of black persons relating to each other in happy ways. It looks like their life is wonderful. Underneath the picture, the words say, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord." You remembered last week's bulletin cover. It showed a picture of white folk with their flesh falling away from their bones. They looked ugly even to you. Underneath that picture it said, "Inasmuch as you do it to the least," and least was underlined, "of these my children, you have done it unto me." You look at the stained glass windows, all showing black figures. A black Jesus hangs on the cross. When the pastor preaches, she talks about Kenya and Zimbabwe. You never hear anything about Sweden or Germany. The hymns are all sung in 3/8 time. It is not the rhythm of white people. You like the steady, walking type beat. But every time you suggest that people sing music that relates to your life, they say, "We can't sing that music. This is God's house, and we must offer the best." The prayers of the church are somehow different, too, because all the images of God are black. You pray to this black God, and this God is like the black people, having the same likeness. If God is like these people, then God does not want you either. You do not measure up in beauty, in feeling, in expression, and nothing of your history matters to this God. The time comes for sharing the peace. yet no one comes to you. A little child makes her approach, and then you notice that her mother turns her in another direction, away from you. You experience loneliness and wonder where God is in all this. The sign out front, "Everybody welcome," does not apply to you. At the conclusion of the worship service, the chairperson of the Christian Education Committee comes up to you and calls you by your first name. The chairperson says, "We'd like you to become a youth advisor. We want to reach out to the white kids in this neighborhood who are on the streets. We'd like to help them." You say you will think about this. You head home. You try to get in touch with all of your feelings about this day. Feelings towards yourself, feelings toward God, feelings towards black people and the black world in which you live. Get in touch with your feelings, and when you're ready, open your eyes. I apologize for reading so quickly, but I have much to say today and much that I want to share with you. First, white people only. Feelings. Reaction.
It's really rather hard to visualize, but the more you got into the story, the more I became aware of how difficult it would be, how hard it would be to be in a situation like that. Well, all I can relate to in my feelings, because I've not experienced that, is in other times when I have been a stranger in a group, and it did not matter the color of the skin, but they did not accept me, and so I tried to sense those feelings, but very scary.
Thanks for sharing. Someone else.
Felt very powerful for me. First, I'm wary. I can feel my shoulders come up, and then defiant. Mm-hmm. Piss on you, you know. Mm-hmm. I'll take care of myself. Mm-hmm. I continued being wary, but then I'm an adult and feel isolated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling first of all, I shouldn't be having to me, and if I think my mind a little bit, I can reverse it. This happens to someone, but not to me. But if I got my head working, you know, I know that any minority or a person who is in a minority situation, meaning one and everybody else different,
mm-hmm,
from him,
fine,
or her, that's potentially some pieces of that would happen, and I've experienced it briefly, but it was upsetting inside in that respect, and knowing that it certainly can, will, and does happen.
I have a hard time believing it. I just
hard.
Get very angry. Sam?
Yeah, I'm not sure it had an impact, because I can always go back to my power base.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that if one is left naked in a situation like that, where you have no recourse, it makes a tremendous difference. And I think that one can fantasize something,
mm-hmm,
like that,
mm-hmm,
and feel real bad. But, you know, it doesn't get down to the gut.
Sure.
For me, at least. Because I can always go back.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel my power base is.
Sure. So it's a game. You know this game.
It's a game, but, well, I went in and out of really feeling part of that and letting myself do that and feeling lonely, and then stepping aside and thinking of all people who have lived their lives like that and just feeling a real sadness. Sadness not just for the people who are isolated, but for those of us who have done the isolating.
My Black brothers and sisters can get in the discussion anytime.
I can't relate to anything that I can sort of even feel what you read, but I can't relate to it because my experience is so foreign to that. I think I was 25 years old before I ever was close enough to a Black person to visit. And when I was in the Army, and the first one I visited with, I had a very good relationship because I accepted him into a work group that somebody else had rejected him from, and I got on time. The next was a whole platoon of laborers who were in the field hands, I guess. And I had quite a few contacts, one-on-one or one-on-two or three, in a business way, would have been related pretty well. And I've had lots of contacts with Orientals and people from the islands of the Pacific, sometimes in their setting, but they were never in a situation where there was either antagonism or apparent reserve.
Yeah, but I guess that's not what this was all about. I guess it was about this experience here and now for you. It was not based on any previous experience, you know, so I guess I'd like you to get in touch.
It's hard to put
myself. It's hard to get in there, isn't it? Especially when I had to read so quickly and know that, you know.
Well,
thanks for sharing, though.
I feel sorry for a lot of people in this room who cannot relate to that.
Yeah.
Because I live that life every day.
And I want to say, when I first came to the village, I felt that.
What? I didn't know.
I felt those feelings.
When you first came.
Having coming here, because I am not Lutheran, you know, but I'm with people here who are Lutheran, you know, the foreign religion, and being a minority and knowing that some of the whites who I'm around do not know how to relate to me. And so I felt a strong isolation. And so, you know, I feel that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Marsha.
When you first started out, I thought it was kind of funny because I wasn't into it deep enough, you know, and it was hard to imagine. Then as you went on, and I could get a little deeper into it, and I remember me as a kid in that type of a situation. And like, it was a long time before I knew where the Black side of the radio band was, so to speak. So I went down in the 1600s, you know. And then what comes to me was how I had to adapt, so to speak, before I knew that I could make a choice and put myself as the little white boy in the Black neighborhood, as opposed to being the Black person in the white neighborhood. The white person has a greater choice to go back, as someone suggested, back to the power structure. Whereas the Black person in that situation, he doesn't have such a greater choice. And if he doesn't learn, or he or she doesn't learn to adapt to that type of environment, then it's going to destroy them.
Could you imagine being white in that situation?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's
I've only once other time done it in a greater group than that.
Yeah,
that does seem to happen.
Once doing that, it was sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is Betty right?
No,
Leon.
I'm sorry.
I can't, it's a little dark in the room.
I just want to piggyback on that. I was going to say earlier that the key word is the power base thing interpreted for Blacks as powerlessness. Mm-hmm. And that's often interpreted in many instances as destructiveness. and a lot of other relativenesses. And I think one of the things that people just have to be aware of is that powerlessness begets anger and a lot of other feelings. And if people don't get in touch with that, and I'm not just talking white people, I'm talking Asian people, people of other colors who are not in tune to what blacks have gone through. I came from the South. I lived through Jim Crow. My first experience with Woolworths was the color in black fountain. When I think of Woolworth, the store of Crest, those were the first words I actually learned to read in public. And there are a lot of years that black people have to get out of our system. Some people get it out angrily. Some love it away. And basically, as far as I'm concerned, if it's going to ever go, it's going to have to be loved away.
I think as we went through the exercise, the place where it became experientially more real for me was entering the church, because I now feel as though I can identify with some of those kinds of things, being a woman in the church, and that's what's kind of helped me understand what that feels like, because I feel more often than not a foreigner in our hierarchical structure. When we talk about the stained glass windows and the patriarchal language and all of that, then I don't have anybody to identify with either. And so that's where it grabs me.
Thank you. And I guess that just leads us into a little bit of a discussion today, that we wanted to talk a little bit about the women's issue around and racism. And that's what gets real complicated, because women can identify at the point where, for instance, women did not have a vote early on, black and white women. That was something we shared. But as we've developed, what's happened with racism is so strong, much stronger, that black women have got to align themselves with the male, the black male, because that becomes the lowest person on the totem pole for them. So we've had this conflict going on, where black and white women have not been able to always affirm each other, because the enemy, as I sort of a reality the other day, and I was sharing with Martin, that when you realize this, and with apologies to my white brothers, the enemy, the common enemy, is the white male. For the black male, the black woman, and the white woman. And so that's the dynamic that gets set up that still makes it hard sometimes for black women to align themselves with white women. The choice coming globally is my liberation. What's important to me may not be the need of my black sister or my Asian sister or my Hispanic sister. In the early days of the feminist movement or liberation, women wanted to be able to leave the home and go to work. Black women, the happiest thing would be if they didn't have to go off to work. They could stay home. They were out cleaning everybody's houses or trying to make a living. Single parent, those of who are in my feminization of poverty, the high statistic in terms of women's heads of household. So our liberation and our need was very different, and still is. And we're still struggling with the fact that what's liberation for me as a white woman, my needs in the church as a white woman like you, to have gender inclusive language, some female images, women clergy, that's still not necessarily going to meet the needs of our black sisters. So that is the struggle. I do not come here with an answer today, but I come one more time trying to put that issue out, as we tried to put out last week, when we were able to sit together and have this discussion. Make sense?
Yeah.
Please stop.
To make it even more complex than that, I'm from the Chicago area of the United Church of Christ. Our president of our seminary in Chicago is a black male, and the ranking officer in the Illinois Conference is a black male. And when these men come to visit our churches, the fraternity is much clearer, and that makes me feel personally even more alienated. The representation of the black male in the United Church of Christ is clearly more visible than that of the women.
The retired bishop of the Pacific Northwest Annual Conference in the Methodist Church is black.
Methodists, we have Methodists with us and have for the last 2 weeks, which has been a real treat. And you do, and you have black women, and a black woman bishop, and not like our Episcopalian friends. I think there's one room where the recent ruling was that they can be bishop, but if congregation doesn't feel comfortable with them coming in to do sacraments like confirmation, etc., they can ask for a man. So that's no gain.
We have so many women pastors that it's
wonderful.
Yes, wonderful. My daughter happens to be one of them.
Good.
But I know a number of them, and they've gone into parishes as strangers, but they've been overwhelmingly accepted, in my observation. Yeah. And they've done good work. They ought to be accepted.
Good.
I'd like to get to that issue of the black female versus the white female and that whole alienation issue. And your statement that you've gone back and it was the black woman who went out. And I think an important issue is the black woman went out because she had to.
Yes.
The white woman stayed home because she wanted to.
Thank you.
And what I see now is a reverse of that. I think for both women, the opportunity should be there for each of us to have that. But what has happened, and while you mentioned a few scattering of blacks here and there, that still does not get to a percentage that makes very much sense when you talk about the total population. What I want to address is the issue where with affirmative action, that means a large percentage of white women have taken on, and we're talking about positions of, again, power.
Yes.
And again, black women have been placed in subservient roles. And where I'm from in Tacoma, there are black women who have had administrative positions. They're torn down, they're spoken against and about, and they're fired. And who replaces them but another minority who is Asian, and that is the acceptable minority. And the issue, being a black woman myself, that bothers me. Mm-hmm. It bothers me personally, it bothers me spiritually, it bothers me in every facet. And I think that's an issue that we need to continue to talk about. I don't know, I think we're in a society now where people want to have more. Mm-hmm. And we don't care what happens.
How we get it.
How we get it. And we women are fighting against each other. And when we talk about the male, be it black or white or whatever, I think they continue to make us as women the victims.
Thank you.
Amen.
I couldn't have said that. Thank you for saying that.
I have this sense that I've had for a couple of years now, that with our multicultural boards and everything else, that we will have every cultural diversity in place, but those will all be men.
Yep.
And the women will still be left out. And it's to the advantage of the powers that be, supposedly, to keep us fighting against ourselves, amongst ourselves, because
we won't figure it out for a long, long time, but we better be sisters together.
Well, it's a game that's been played a long time. The only addition is white women have been brought into the game with a different perspective. In other words, for many years we've known that the thing was to keep black people fighting among themselves for positions. Now that women are considered a minority, it is very easy to put even a white woman in a black woman's position and reach the quota of minority. I know this happens on my husband's job as a plumber. Mm-hmm. When they needed another minority worker, which is, would have been a black male in many instances, they brought in a white woman, and this is on a construction site. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same game, and I believe you did peg the controller of the game when you said the white male. Mm-hmm. But it's just now the spectrum is wider. You can include more people in the, I call it, the chicken feed game. Yes. You throw out the chicken feed and the chickens all go running and fighting each other. That's
meanwhile, the fox gets in the hen house.
Janet and then Marshall.
This spring, we were elected opposite of people who represent us at the district convention, and they had a minority ticket for late women who were running. And then they had two, and then they had the straight ticket for
the white ticket.
The white ticket.
From this.
And of course, the minority ticket, they have names, all minority names are little stars, right?
Asterisks.
Yeah, little star asterisks. So I ran on the ticket, but instead of me fighting among my sisters on the minority ticket, I ran on the white ticket. And I won on the first ballot and got the most votes.
That's right, she did. That was one small victory.
Right, it was, because
we are priests. You hear what she's saying is that there's one ticket where two blacks run against each other as a guaranteed black, and then Janet was nominated on what I call, that's probably going to get back to my bishop, but well, the white ticket, and won it, and I was pleased about that.
And Arch.
I'd like to piggyback on, I'm sorry,
Leona
says, being in the electrical trade and union, I see the white male would readily accept the black male as a minority before he accepts the white female as a minority.
In your experience?
Yeah, because they have talked about pure sexist. This is a man's job, and women ought not be allowed in this type of a workplace. And they look down on them, and they give them the hardest job to do, to test them. And if they come through that test, okay, you're at least qualified. But you can expect, you can expect that you're going to get the hardest job all the time now, like they used to do to the black male. And I'm in a position, I would rather accept the white female that knows how to do the job than the white male that knows how to do the job, because I would rather have her working beside me, because she looks at me as also a minority, okay, and I can look at her as a minority.
Don't tell us how you look at her.
Okay. And in the type of trade that we're in, I would rather have my trust with the white female who's qualified that I can trust than with the white male who perceives he's qualified that I can't trust.
And does a power trip.
But you know, you get another side of the picture. Some 20 years ago, I was financing a cement finishing contractor who was a black. He went out of his job, and I'd taken over the account from another fellow who'd been handling it. So I went out to his job. The first time I visited, he had six or seven people working on the job, I forget. He was bossing the job. Two black men were working, the rest were all whites. And after I got to know him more, well, this was some months later, I went back to him and she said, you still have mostly white fellows working for you? And he said, yeah. He says, my son and one of his high school buddies works for me, the rest are all white. And, and I said, why? And he says, because I can't find any more blacks who want to work.
Aww.
And this was in Seattle.
Sure.
So a lot of black people that wanted to work,
yeah.
Whether they didn't want to do that kind of work or what, I don't know.
That is such a wonderful point. I heard that for the 4 years of that that I was at the seminary. Mm-hmm. We can't find anybody that's a woman that's qualified mm-hmm. to work here. Well, you know what?
Maybe
well, this was a black man.
They didn't look. You know.
This was a black man looking for black work.
He didn't.
You know what he says about the skills that Chu Edwards in the plant and laid off not.
That's right.
But in the plant, women are really abused. First of all, they're given, they're put in the apprentice programs now because they have to meet a quota. They've got to have so many women, they've got to have so many blacks. The black woman, of course, counts double under the books. But the abuse that they take so much sexual harassment.
Yeah.
They give them the worst job, the dirtiest and the dangerous job. You're exposed to all kind of sexist pictures, nude women, and I mean, it's just unreal the abuse that women in the trade have to take, and that's something that should be addressed by the church. Even women who work in a shop are not really treated with their proper respect.
You know what my answer is? I see the same thing on construction sites,
yeah.
That, you know, how the women get abused by particularly the writings on the wall and the pictures on the wall. And I say to the women, you do the same thing in the male perspective. You bring me pictures of naked men and hang them.
They won't let you do it. I tried it once. I brought it to work. I put it on the plexiglass. I came the next day. They had spray painted. Yeah. Brought it in. The next day they just destroyed them all together. I figured it wasn't worth the hassle. But I wanted them to know how I felt as a
That's
woman.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Absolutely.
And we really, truly, we tried it. With, you know, didn't work that way, but
because
I went to management, I went to the union about it, you know, why should I have to look at a naked woman all day, you know? It didn't, you know,
but there's
definitely a
great
man. If I'm hearing you, that for you, then, was the racism on the job or the sexism on the job?
They're both. See, you know, most auto plants in the Detroit area, most plants are black. I worked in Pontiac Motors. Pontiac Motors was not black. It was mostly a white plant.
Mm-hmm.
There were 95%, I would say, white, and the rest of us were blacks and Hispanic. So, you know, we were very much
red.
He lived in South Lyons, and that's like 10 miles from Pontiac. And when they had the bus thing where they were doing integrating schools in Pontiac, one of the workers at Pontiac blew up all the buses. So it's a racist, a very racist plant. And you had to put up with it, you know. I had to put up with a boss who told me that he didn't believe a woman should work in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore he would give you the worst job. Because he didn't feel, it was his thought that we shouldn't be there. So therefore he said he wouldn't let his wife work. I don't have anything to do with his wife. I had a family that I had to support.
Mm-hmm.
I was a single, divorce is the same as being single,
yeah.
Raising two kids, and I had to get out and work every day, but that was it, so he gave us the worst job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Therefore, I had to get surgery in my hands, that carpal tunnel, and that, and time off on the job, but that's just the way it goes.
These are not makeup stories, these are the real thing.
Now, before we go too far, Helen, I wish you could tell your story. Because this is a black woman that works in a hospital and all her friends are white. Okay, so it's just the opposite reverse.
What's the tell?
Well, I'll tell.
That's
you.
The tell.
I'll tell.
Helen, do you want to tell?
Well, I've been working at this particular hospital for over 10 years. And they weeded out all of the black people that they felt were lazy or hard to get along with or whatever. And because of the neighborhood I grew up in, I'm basically an easygoing person, and I'm used to white people.
No excuses.
Just tell it.
You learn those well.
And, well, I am the only black nurse working on our shift and have been for the past 3 years. And they have no plans at this time of what I can see hiring.
How does that make you feel?
In your opinion, not theirs.
They can weed out anybody they want.
Yeah, but did you, in your opinion, did they deserve?
You can weed out anybody you want to.
But you, how does that make you feel?
Isolated. Marshall was probably bringing this up because at one time I was going to go to the NAACP. But then they felt that I had no grounds because they did hire other black nurses for other shifts, just not mine.
Could you identify some of the criteria of getting along or not getting along as to why these people were fired?
I really cannot.
Well, I cannot identify the criteria why she gets along. She does not get into a discussion about racism and sexism with the people on the job. And someone suggested learning the survival skill. Mm-hmm. And I almost got in between that one time at a party.
Okay. Why do I know this is true?
And Helen was a little frightened about that because she didn't know how these people are going to now relate to her, you know.
Sure.
But as it turned out, these people were at least open-minded enough to hear what I say and not give the rebuttal to her on the job. So she was a little lucky in that.
Stay in there, rebuttal.
Well, not to the extent that you lost the job. And can not I to the extent really, that you lost
your
friendship.
Can I speak back to him?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, then Diane.
Okay, I was raised in an interracial neighborhood. And I went to an all-white high school. And when I joined the Lutheran Church as a child, there was only two other black families. So I basically grew up with mostly all white friends, okay? And I still have more white friends than black friends. But when I worked in the shop, when I hired in, everybody already had their kind of patterns of friendships set up. So I didn't have anybody to buddy around. I didn't live in Pontiac. I didn't know anybody. So I started playing euchre, and you know who plays euchre, don't you? White folks. So I played euchre and I played pinochle and that. And I got a label put on me. You know what the label was?
White lover.
There you go.
White lover.
Yeah. And it wasn't intentionally. I did not single off, but my friend became because those were the ones that I played cards with. And if you played cards with, we eat lunch together, we celebrated our birthdays together, we were buddies, you know, because those were, I didn't know anybody else in the community. And truly enough, I became a white person lover. From the blacks. And I've been Lutheran all my life, and so all my life I've always been a minority, but when you go, you don't even think about it anymore. You're a person and I'm a person. I don't think about what color you are.
And you have to deal with it.
There are times, though, you do feel left out. There's times when you get together at night and everybody goes off their own way and you're left there by yourself. You know, there's times when you have your little thing where you're not inclusive. And it's not intentional. You don't mean it. But there are times where you stick together and you're kind of on the outside.
So you say that the friendship is limited.
Yes.
You talk about that with the ladies.
You be at work and you'll hear people, or they'll talk about their baby shower or their daughter's wedding coming up and that, and all the things they do.
You don't get invited.
You understand what
that's
I'm saying?
That's racism. From a feminist perspective. Diana, then Leo.
I've been listening and I guess I have my own expectations about what, I think it's a lot more centered than the last meeting we had. Topic. And yet,
well, you think we're making it this time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually,
I'm not going to tell Cheryl that's her fault.
I guess the other thing is that when I heard feminine instead of, you know, I think women solve things differently than men do sometimes, just from the place that they come from. And it seems like we can change this, you know? It's like,
women have the power to change.
Women have the power to change.
More so than men, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but just because sort of what you were saying, Marshall, it's just, I think women come. I don't want to make it that women are different than men. I don't like that.
But they
are. They are.
I mean,
try it, Diana. Try it. No, go ahead.
No one's going to try it.
But, you know, I mean, this, you know how I run things. Nobody beats each other up. I don't allow it.
I think that there's different ways of thinking, and that there isn't feminine masculine. There is feminine masculine thinking, but it's not male female. And I think women are more particular. So what you're talking about, when you get to know somebody one-on-one, then there's barriers. It's hard to have them there. Takes a lot of courage. I lived in your neighborhood. You know, I graduated with 130 people and had two black people in our school, let alone my class. And I almost thought it was unfortunate that one was a track star and one was the great musician. You know, it was almost stereotypical, because I moved there from the city and I thought it was hard enough, as a country, rural area. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's particular. My first roommate in college was black, and just sitting around and watching her part her hair into these 1-inch squares without looking. And we talk, and she'd roll all her hair up. And I just sit there and go, how can you do that, you know? And just living with Tweety was just Tweety. But living together for the time.
That was her baptized name.
For the time that we did, you know, like it was just a freshman dorm thing, you know. She put in my hair and it would fall down in a half hour, and she'd go, how can that happen? And she'd be putting all this grease in her hair, and I'd be trying to take all the grease out of my hair. I had 10 products to do that. And but just living with her, it takes away all those barriers. And it's just like last week.
Relate woman to woman.
Just last week, I just wanted to say, so why do you guys always say, when the pastor talks? You know, it's like, as a Lutheran where I grew up, it's like you didn't talk. You didn't even play with the edge of your skirt. You didn't play with your socks. You sat there like you were frozen. And it's a good tool now that I'm older. If I have to be good, I just pretend I'm in church. but you know, I can make up all kinds of theories, but until I walk over and ask Marty why he does that, or ask Marshall, you know, it's not going to happen. And it takes courage and risks, and I guess I think that's what women can do easier sometimes than men have been.
You know what happened to me today at lunch? I got to tell you, I sat down with some people I never saw them before, and I sit down and I was eating my lunch, and he said, did you ever read the biography on Booker T. Washington?
But he's trying.
He was trying, but he didn't say hello or anything. He said, did you ever read the book of Booker T. Washington?
Wait, yeah. I see Linnea. I can't always see him.
I'm responding to something that she said that I think we have to be very aware of. I too believe in the power of feminism. However, I believe that walks hand in hand with the church, and that we've got to hold on to that. And I also think that we cannot let this world get away with thinking that what we're doing is making change. We're correcting.
Thank you.
We are not changing, we're correcting.
Thank you.
And if the church is not willing to this is one of this must be the most evil sin around. And if the church is not willing to change or correct, there I am too, correct our own structure willingly, they need to be.
Let me care. I know.
Step back.
White out. That's all.
That's right. That's
she, goes, right. She goes and whites out the hymnal. So.
I hope you know. It's all right.
Okay, I'll take one more and then down here, and I want to read you something else.
I would just appreciate some comment from either black women or white women, but I was in a racism workshop a couple of years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, where one of the facilitators, a black woman at the end, had a word for some of the people in our community who were pretty strong white feminists. And it was a 5-minute thing where she basically said that maybe at some point she could see some more connections between what the white feminists were about and what she felt she was about as a black woman. But at this point, she felt pretty disconnected, and she felt closer to her black brothers than she did to her white sisters, because the white feminist movement did not have black women on the agenda or any of the concerns that black women had. And I just wondered if that was a fair perception on the part of black women here, if they feel that, and if white women feel the same about the white feminist movement, whether that agenda is being taken up.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the feminist movement came out, I would agree that there's not enough black women speakers in the feminist movement, but I think that I have read some, and I can't offhand think of any names, but I do believe that it's gradually coming into the picture, and we have to really recognize the interrelatedness of racism and sexism, mm-hmm. because it's all relating into this patriarchal society, and we have to see what our real enemy is and just quit fighting it between ourselves.
But do black women see the
Leona would like to answer
white?
You, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going back when the word feminism first came up, my reaction was this, and it's pretty much the same. I'll start by saying that the camaraderie between black women and white women is ideal, and there's a lot to be gotten from it, but definitely not to the sacrifice of the relationship of black women and black men. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time coming that I can feel comfortably feel that kind of relationship with my black man, because I need him. And if I have to choose between him and the camaraderie of white women, I would definitely have to choose him. I don't want to have to make that choice. That choice should not be the choice. But I think she is right. There are a lot of things that I have to straighten out. When I say I mean black woman, black man, plural, with my man first before I can relate to anyone else. And that's foremost and first. I'm not Ms., I'm Mrs. And I'm Mrs. Leona Nicholas Welch, and that Welch talks about a relationship with a black man. And what's after that is ideal.
I'd like to bring it down to another level, and that's the level of economics. And I think racism is definitely an economic issue. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the issue now between black and white females are an economic issue. Mm-hmm. I think in the past, black women had their little 10-cent jobs, okay? What did I say? Black women had
black
the 10-cent jobs. White women stayed home, except for those who were single. They've been in the structure of money. They inherited monies. They're born into monies. Now with the divorce rate being as high as it is, placing women, white women, in a different category, economically, I would say one, they're going after the jobs. They're angry, as we have been. They are egotistical, as we have been. I don't think we can limit the identities that women bring to the workplace just to black or white women. I think in the past, black women have had to survive with a little. The 60s brought opportunities for some black women that were not there. The opportunity for the white women has always been there. But I think on one level, white women have been afraid of the white men. They have been kind of couched down and said, you know, they said, okay, I'm going to be the mother and the housewife, and I'm going to do all of these little servant things for my man. And now that the men are saying, hey, you know, there's great greener pastures over here, and leaving you with all of the problems and the dregs, then women have become a little more questioning and saying, hey, you know, I'm smarter, I can do it better, and I can make as much money as you. And they're doing it selfishly. And again, the black woman is put into another economic crunch. And I think if we can look at it in that way, we talk about love, we talk about Christianity, and if we continue to carry that, and we all have to survive, and we try to work together at survivorship, I think we can do it. I don't think there are any differences. I think we each have our own power, and the woman, black and white, yellow and green, that's a new
Is there a green woman out there that came in on this last boat?
What have you been drinking?
That we don't have.
Holden water.
Holding water?
Holden.
But I think, you know, we need to get off of the men. What we need to be about is looking at our strengths and our own power and not look at the negative side of it. And go out there and do it. And we can do it.
I'm going to let Sammy in, and then Martin, and then Carol.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to say that after I heard Jesse Jackson speak for the second time today, and it just stirred my soul again. And you know that phrase of his that comes through again and again, we have to find common ground, you know? And I think until every one of us, you know, what steps are we going to take? Everything that I have said, and I hear others saying, I know it's reality, but what is that step that we are going to take as a people who have to rekindle that anger in the pit of our stomach at any kind of injustice, whether that is against white women or black women, and that we need to take those risks of acting out of that anger. We really need to rekindle that. Again, so that we have, she says, win it by love.
Yeah.
And I positively agree. But, you know, I think we also steel ourselves against becoming too angry.
Yeah.
And I just know my daughters have worked in hospitals where the jokes against women and racist jokes are just hanging thick from the ceiling. And if you risk to say, I will not, and walk out of the surgery, when something like that happens, you know, you're risking your job.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Mark, are you done, Sammy? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think I think we need to weave this thing together, and I think that feminist movement has been a viable movement, but we need to make the linkages between all of this. And like Virginia Mollicott, like I said in my course this morning, that she says the will of God is that new humanity and that new world of mutuality on a global scale. And you know, that will not happen in our lifetime, but that is our dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jesse says, we must not stop dreaming and finding common ground for one another.
Yeah, just to get back to something that was said, that we always talk about love, but we need to do it. That's the first step. The second step is that I think that this also adds another dimension, this multidimensional impact in the destruction of the black family as a result of all of this, and the results and the outcomes that come from the destruction of the black family that only cause further hardships in in the community.
I guess I said Carol and Marshall and then Leona.
I'm not quite sure what I was trying to get at here, but I had a an experience of a teacher in my internship parish when I was in Lubbock, Texas. And she was a high school math teacher, and she came in one day and she was just furious because one of the things that apparently was a common, supposed to be a compliment to her, was for somebody to say that she thought like a man, which made her just furious.
That's not, I guess,
the whole stereotype of the math teacher.
Did she like girls?
Anyway, what was interesting?
I have a job now, but
yeah,
they say
what
that.
What was interesting was this young woman went on to into a tirade in which she said, "I get so tired of being thought to be the one that has reality clearly in sight and all that kind of thing." She said, and that's compared to a male's way of thinking. How can men be thought to be the realistic thinkers when they don't even experience reality? They're given the privilege, they're given all the privilege and the priority, and they're catered to. And you know, that was out of a tremendous anger. And it seems to me that there's something in there that's truthful, that is, women have had to be more flexible in their thinking. We've had to think, first of all, our reaction, and then we have to think about what their reaction is. And we learn to think off both sides of our brain or whatever. And it seems to me that the side that's just angry there is, there's something wrong with that. Operating out of reality is not even a possibility for anybody else except me because I'm a woman. That's ridiculous. But somehow it behooves those who are in a privileged position to listen to people who aren't in that position because they may have reality more down than they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's sort of.
I think that's what Helen's doing at her job.
You know, just as she said, why I think that women, whether they're black or white, has the power to deal with both racism and sexism better than the male, black or white, because I believe, as a male, that I speak more from my heart than a woman who I believe speaks more from her mind.
That's amazing.